Happy Thursday, everyone. We're nearly there. Another week done, another Saturday on the horizon, and that means a preview show. As the U's guy looking for their first win in seven down in the West Country, I'm joined by the Zorb King himself, Jack Swindlehurst. Let's not linger on it, as I'm sure people are bored after we dedicated about half of the show last week to it. But from the man himself, how was it?
No, it was great fun. I regretted just how I approached the second half of the game. I also regretted not trying to hit the crossbar at the end after we come out of the Zorbs, because the person next to me after the sprinklers went wrong and said I would stack it if I did it, and I didn't, but I think I would have got it, so that could have redeemed myself a bit.
Your goal was great though, mate. It was a great goal, great finish.
Yeah, showing a little bit of what Mark Bonner's maybe missing, but much like United, bit off more than I could chew and ended up on the wrong end of a loss.
Well, Bonner did say after the Pizza Cup defeat on Tuesday, which we won't be talking about for loads of reasons, he did say that a lot of the players hadn't quite shown something on the lines of hadn't quite shown what enough to start games or something like this, hadn't grabbed the opportunity. I just hope he was watching the Zorb, because he does pay you £100 a week to play up front, as you agreed in the summer. I just hope that he saw that performance. Aside from the Zorb, so obviously we talked about it on last week's pod, but how are you feeling after Saturday's performance? I mean, it feels like a long time ago now. I think a lot of us have tried to put it out of our head, the sort of the sucker punch at the end. But on reflection, how are you feeling about the game?
No better. I listened to the pod.
Good. I hope you did. if you're not listening, then who the bloody hell else is listening?
I know, getting those listeners up. But I'm not feeling any better. It's completely deflating. I feel we were really, we weren't very good at all against a team that were kind of there for the taking. I think even after a win, the whole of September they didn't score. I spoke to a Shrewsbury fan who said they were very lucky in that 1-0 victory against Northampton. And I just don't feel like we went for the game. And then to steal a lead like that with an absolutely incredible goal and not build on it or just see the game out, it just doesn't get any better the longer. Time is a great healer, they say. I don't feel healed. I feel like the injury is getting worse.
Do you feel wounded? Feel like infected?
Infected wound, exactly. That's how they described me.
Is that the first time I've called you infected on this pod?
I highly doubt it. We've been doing it for years. I feel like it was really just it really poor game management and the sign of an immature team. And I don't want to go too deep into it, but with players like Morrison and Ryan Bennett, who came in to steady the ship and did so well in that postseason, and then to see players like that who we target as people who are experienced and will get us through situations like this, to see them not able to even kind of just do the basics was really difficult to see. And it really put a sour taste in the mouth of what could have been, another clean sheet and 3 points. It's turned into 2 points lost and, staring down the barrel of what could be the most humiliating defeat in our League One tenure if we lose this weekend.
That's a bit of a teaser for the second half of this pod. I think that's a pretty good reflection on Saturday, to be honest. Feels very doom and gloom at the moment, doesn't it? I think let's not dwell on it too much, because if we do lose on Saturday, then that pod will be interesting. people will have their takes on that. Let's another bit of news this week, definitely worth quickly touching on, is the cup draw. Everyone always loves the first round of the cup. Pretty glamorous tie for the U's, Bracknell Town at home. What do you know about Bracknell Town?
Yeah, like others of the pod, I had to Google Bracknell Town because I didn't actually know where they were from and what level they played at. They did well in their last game. They beat Basingstoke 4-0.
Huge.
So, it's one of those that if it was away, it would feel dangerous. And, Curzon Ashton last year, it just came at the wrong time and left a lot of people tainted. And then we proceeded to lose to a team that actually got to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. And really, we might feel like, Grimsby getting to the quarters, might have been like a kind of sign of how bad our season was when we were kind of languishing down there and we could have had a nice run in the cup. I know we didn't need a distraction maybe, but it's good that it's at home. And if we can kind of get a few goals on the board against a lower league team, then it'll actually be quite handy for us. It is just always that thing about a banana skin when you've got a team that low. But I mean, there's kind of no eventuality where we should be struggling against a team from tier seven. I mean, that's going down quite far. And to be honest, if Bonner did see what I did at the weekend there is a kind of argument for getting me in the FA Cup squad, you know, giving me a run out of that and seeing if I can put a few past Bracknell. But I mean, it's a great draw, and it's good that it's at home because we don't need another, you know, 2-3 hour away day, especially with trains and everything. So get a bit of a crowd in and have a bit of a lift maybe when we actually need it. It could be quite handy, I think.
It'd be handy. I mean, that's the right way to think about it. I think just with the U's, I'm just too scarred. I can only think about Curzon Ashton last year. I can only think about, you know, 0-0 draw, a replay on a Tuesday night down in Bracknell. They hold us to another draw or something, and then we scrape through somehow with an extra 120 minutes in the tank or whatever. But yeah, look, hopefully it is pretty straightforward as it should be. I mean, our second string, let's be honest, should be able to put them away fairly comfortably. Mm-hmm. But like you say, it could be actually a really good confidence booster in that period, which could be much needed. Obviously, we'll preview that somehow just beforehand. I did want to just highlight this, which did make me laugh, because obviously, you know, Bracknell Town, when you get to that level of football, you're talking about semi-pros and a lot of volunteers that obviously help keep clubs like that running, which obviously a huge shout out to them because it's massively important for the lifeblood of lower league football. But it did make me laugh. We'd like to think of ourselves as quite big time now, obviously. Doug Shulman, friend of the pod, BBC Cam's commentator, he tweeted after the draw, "Very few current links between Cambridge United and Bracknell Town, although youth stopper James Holden played one game on loan of Town during the 1920 season whilst on the books of Reading." To which Bracknell Town FC, the official account, replied, "Your number two, Kevin Betsy, grew up the road next to our owner, who, quote, said, yes, he had the best BMX in the street, a light green mongoose." And to me, that's the problem with professional football, is there isn't enough Twitter accounts replying with things like this. "That's the best BMX in the street, a light green mongoose." I'd love to be seeing.
I thought you were going to say the problem with modern day football is not enough assistant managers bopping around on BMX. but no, that really is the magic of the FA Cup. But it is nice to see, and it's a great thing for Bracknell. The first round this year of the FA Cup has actually got a few more kind of bona fide, you know, spirit of the FA Cup, and there'll be people cringing into their pre-match lunches while they listen to this, hearing me talk about the magic of the FA Cup. But you've got your Horshams, you've got Scarborough, you know, you've got low teams that are coming in and really looking for a fairy tale story, and Bracknell will fall into that bracket. So I think it's kind of, you know, it's a bit of a double-edged sword for United. It's a good draw, and it's good it's at home. We hopefully can get a few, you know, a bit of a confidence booster in, but there's always that horrible nagging banana skin in the back of the head.
I do remember last year, speaking of last year's cup, I think it was last year, it might have actually been the year before, maybe you'll remember, but I remember Cheltenham losing at home to Alverchurch, which can't be far below or similar level to Bracknell. Obviously, Cheltenham ended up finishing mid-table, but that at the time seemed like a bit of a damning indictment of their squad. So obviously, you know, things can change, but you don't want to feed into that narrative as much as you can. Speaking of Cheltenham, should we move on to the main event? Before we have a little chat about Cheltenham away, let's hear from an expert. Let's hear from John Palmer from Gloucestershire Live. John, thank you very much for taking the time to join us. How are you?
I'm all good, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. Obviously, we're here to talk about our fixture this weekend. Talking about Cheltenham Town this season so far must not be the happiest thing to do. If it's not too harrowing, I suppose, could you bring us all up to speed with your season so far, and how have you coped with it all?
Yeah, no problem at all. I mean, you're absolutely right. But I would like to start with a positive, that Daryl Clark's only been in charge for two league games, and Cheltenham have already got a draw against Derby at home, got their first goal. Obviously, it was a long time coming, but his record isn't that bad. He's got a point against Derby from two league games. His first one was a defeat against Fleetwood at home. So I think that game would have just sort of underlined to him how big a task he's got, because Cheltenham were poor that night. But I think there were signs in the Derby game that he's starting to get his ideas across. And now he's had a really conveniently timed international break where Cheltenham didn't have a game at the weekend. It would have been Wickham away, but they've had a full 2 weeks, in terms of league games, they've had a full 2 weeks to prepare for this one. So I'm hoping that we'll see a bit more evidence on Saturday of him making his mark. But as you say, there's no getting around it. It's been a dreadful start to the season overall, a record-breakingly bad in terms of the worst non-scoring start to an EFL season in history. It's the first time a team have ever gone 5 home games at the start of an EFL season without a goal. They equaled the all-time EFL record for not scoring, which is 11 games. And then they avoided breaking it with the goal against Derby to avoid it becoming 12 games. And in terms of minutes, they didn't quite get the record. So I suppose that's something.
Gutted.
But bizarrely, they've picked up points away to Portsmouth and away to Elliot, which is a really good result. There were no signs at that point, which was just a couple of games into the season, that it was going to be such a bad start to the season, because they were losing games, with the exception of Bolton at home, which was a bit of a drubbing. Bolton looked really good. They were losing games 1-0. They were in games. They were just falling the wrong side of games. And Wade Elliott was probably getting sick of saying that after every game. And the fans were certainly getting sick of hearing it. But it was true to a certain extent for the first, I would say, five or six games apart from Bolton. Then you could see the confidence had gone, because there'd been no goal. Everything seemed to be going against them in terms of injuries, which is a whole other talking point. The injuries this season have been atrocious, but they're starting to clear up now. So then suddenly even the most simple things seemed impossible for the players, because they were sort of had it on their mind. We haven't scored a goal yet this season. We haven't got a win this season. And then it did decline a little bit. And he went after, Wade Elliott went after a 3-0 defeat at Peterborough. But even then, James Olienka was sent off in the fourth minute. And they had another man sent off just before the end. So it was nine men. And it was very difficult not to feel a bit sympathy for Wade, because a lot of stuff did go against him. And as a Cambridge follower, you'll know how difficult it is for clubs like Cheltenham and Cambridge to thrive and survive at that level. I mean, Cambridge have done brilliantly in the last few years, but Cheltenham's budget is lower half of League Two. So it's been a worse start than anyone could have possibly imagined. But Cheltenham are probably in the table where everyone expects them to be in the pre-season predictions. They've just got to now try and somehow claw their way out of it under Darrell Clarke.
We've had a couple of brilliant seasons, right? Like staying up comfortably to twice in League One. Under, obviously, I think a lot of people might have expected when Duff left that, maybe not knowing a lot about Wade Elliott, that he might have struggled in his first season. But obviously that isn't what happened. What this summer, what was different? Was it, I know Alfie May left, and I'm sure that's obviously going to be a big part of this, but was the recruitment just not quite up to scratch? Was it bad fortune? Was Elliott maybe, I don't know, was there a lack of quality in his management skills, do you think? Or was it probably a combination of everything, I assume?
Yeah, I think arguably what he achieved last season in terms of finishing 16th is arguably as good, if not better, achievement than what Michael Duff did the year before and finished in 15th, because Duff had brought a team up from League Two, obviously in the title race for Cambridge. It was a really good season. And then gradually that team started to get picked off, because obviously as soon as players do well at Cheltenham, they're going to start getting opportunities elsewhere. And you know, you can't really begrudge them the chance to go and get a significant pay rise. The likes of Toza left, which was a big one. And then, as you mentioned, we'll come on to Alfie May in a minute, but a lot of people expected Cheltenham to have a bit of a start like they've had now last year. He did really well to... There were a few dodgy moments last season, but he did really well to turn it around. And I think there was a bit of optimism going into this season, his second full season in charge. He got that... There's some of those difficult moments last season, like losing 7-0 at home in the League Cup, losing to Alvechurch in the FA Cup, a couple of bad league results, but he sort of kept it together, kept the group very close together, and he did probably overachieve last season. In terms of what went wrong this summer, I think May going was something they knew was going to happen. They couldn't stop it happening. Fans are disappointed they didn't get more money for him, but nobody offered more money. Fans would say, well, there was a pre-agreed fee, so that is why he went for that fee. But he made it clear that he wanted to leave the club last January. If he'd have been forced to stay in January without some sort of agreement, he would have arguably, Cheltenham been relegated last season, because they'd have had a very unhappy Alfie May in the squad. So I'm not just towing the club line, but I can totally understand why they agreed to sell him for the fee they sold him for this summer. So that wasn't a shock. They knew he was going. They probably knew roughly what they were going to get for him. There was no championship interest. There was just a bit of interest from about two League One clubs, one in League Two. And obviously he went to Cheltenham. But what they didn't foresee was the director of football leaving to go to Shrewsbury. Wade Elliott's first team coach, Marcus Bignor, also going to Shrewsbury, and even the recruitment analyst went to Shrewsbury. So there was three members of staff left over the summer. That meant Wade Elliott was basically taking training on his own for the first part of pre-season. The recruitment sort of got thrown up in the air, because Mickey Moore did a brilliant job for Cheltenham over the last few years. He's a big part of the success under Duff and Elliott, but he went to Shrewsbury. Can't blame him. You know, he's got off another job. Good luck to him. He did a good job at Cheltenham. He can always look back with pride. But I think when you go halfway through a summer recruitment programme to join a rival, I think that's always going to leave the club being left in a bit of a difficult situation. Then they had Ryan Broom turn down a new contract to go to Fleetwood. Ryan Jackson turned down a new contract to go to Sutton. It's a bit of a blow because he's dropped down to League Two, but he is London-based, so they couldn't stop him out of contract. So there's, as well as May, there's a couple of other key players. And Caleb Taylor, who did really well at centre-back last year on loan from West Brom, his loan ended. So really, the heart of the team was ripped out, really, over the summer. Then he had the staff departures. He had the nightmare run of injuries. And suddenly, it all culminates to create a... You know, you got 2 points after 12 games.
Yeah, it sounds like a sort of recipe for disaster in that case. It's interesting to hear the sort of backroom side of it, which is obviously something that a lot of people might not know about. In terms of players that you do have, who are players that Cambridge United fans should be looking out for in terms of players that might hurt us or you know, good players to keep an eye on?
Yeah, considering results, there are a few players that have come out of this start to the season with a bit of credit still. Obviously, some have found it difficult. Some have been really battling hard to get themselves fit again after injuries, and it's been a bit of a struggle. So there's been probably too many that have been either missed pre-season or suffered injuries and tried to be rushed back too quickly. But in terms of ones that have come through it well, I'd say Luke Southwood in goal has done well. He was on loan from Reading last season, and they managed to get him in on a permanent in the summer, which everyone was delighted about. Northern Ireland international. So he's a very good, no doubt about it, a good League One goalkeeper. I think he can go and play higher. Back in the back three, which is all, it almost always is at Cheltenham, back three, I think Lewis Freestone has been excellent on the left. He's been at the club for a while, developing, sort of got his chance when Will Boyle left. And he's stepped up, absolute competitor, takes no prisoners, flies into challenges like he means them, but always seems to time them. And, you know, I wouldn't want to play against him if I was a forward. He really is... A formidable opponent, ultra competitive. Been really impressed with him. Midfield, I say Elliot Bonds has probably been scored that cracking goal against Cambridge.
I was literally just about to say, I remember seeing that fly in the top corner, and I can't unsee that name now. Yeah,
yeah. He hasn't scored that many, but he has scored some absolute screamers. He's a really good ball winner, very strong, uses his body well, keeps it simple in terms of when he's got the ball, gives it simple. He's been a really important player. And then I would say left wing back Will Ferry has been pretty good. He's one that's got a bright future, I think. He's ex-Southampton. He's been good. But there are some other good... Like, I think Liam Sercombe's a really important player in midfield. He'll be as disappointed as everyone with the start to the season, Cheltenham fans. He's been at the club for a while, been through some of the best times the club have ever had. Probably in the conversation for one of the best midfielders Cheltenham have ever had. And now he's having to play a part in a team that's really struggling. But he is a proven good League One player. He's 33 now, but I still think he's... The team are a lot better when he's in it. In terms of strikers, obviously, they've only scored one goal and Rob Street scored it. And I think he deserved it because he's a real workhorse. Came in from Palace in the summer, having done well on loan at Shrewsbury last season. He's quite quick, good size. Isn't what you would call a poacher because he does so much unselfish work for the team. But he is a good player. I think he could come good. You know, none of the Cheltenham strikers are going to be being raved about at the moment because of the records, but it's not just, I wouldn't say that any of them have been missing chances left, right and centre. I'd say it's really has been a few and far between actually clear-cut chances because of the struggles that Cheltenham have had. So I wouldn't write off any of the forwards. Aidan Keener did really well second half of last season. They brought in Will Goodwin in January last from Stoke, and he's looked good since he came back from injury. And they've got George Law, who's just coming back from an injury, who look really good in pre-season. So although it might look it from the outside, I don't think Cheltenham's front line is hopeless as people might think from the league table. And I'm sure they will gradually build in confidence and show that they can start hitting the net.
It sounds like there's a fair amount of positivity coming from you, or at least, you know, I know we're early in the season, but yeah, I think I'm sure you'd forgive fans from the outside looking at Cheltenham's league position. I would expect to be hearing about toxic atmospheres and just a general sort of malaise around the club. But just from what you're saying, it sounds like the mood amongst the fan base is maybe slightly more upbeat. I mean, Darryl Clarke's a brilliant manager, but maybe it's not. Is it just him, or is it in general people have still got a lot of faith in the setup?
Yeah, I think he gave everyone a lift when he came in, definitely. I think his appointment was really well received. But I think Wade Elliott deserves a bit of credit because now results weren't good enough and he had to go. But he didn't leave behind a dysfunctional, arguing group of, you know, petulant footballers. He's left behind a group that are now doubly determined to try and get themselves out of it. They almost feel responsible for getting him the sack. He went to say goodbye to them the day after he got sacked. It was quite emotional. He was close with all the players. But Darryl Clarke has come in, I think, just a change of voice. and he's made everyone stand up to attention a little bit. And I think he's given a bit of hope. But for all the positivity that might have come through since I've been chatting about various different players and stuff, it has been a terrible start to the season. I mean, Darrell Clark has admitted that they need to win 15 of their remaining 34 games if they're going to stay up, which is a tall order, isn't it? It would be some achievement. But I think the big thing that I would stress is I don't think his job depends on Cheltenham staying up this season. I think if Cheltenham show signs of progress and they make a fight, they maybe stay in touch until January and then see what they can do in the window. He as long as they are showing the right signs and progressing, I think he will be given the chance to try and bring them back or have a good season in League Two if they do go down. Everyone would probably agree that it looks odds on they're going to go down. You know, you don't get 2 points in the first 12 games and suddenly just sort of stroll to safety. It's going to take a hell of a turnaround. And even Saturday's game feels like a massive one for that reason. Because if Cheltenham lose at home to Cambridge, you know, there's been some great games between them in the past. 5-0 wins for Cambridge, late equalisers for Cambridge. I think it was Mullin scored a late equaliser in the COVID season. Then there was that unbelievable 5-0 under Duff, which nobody saw coming. Certainly, Cheltenham have been really good under Duff at home.
I also remember you coming to the Abbey in the COVID season and winning and essentially, you know, as good as winning the title. At the Abbey, from my memory at least, it felt like we'd lost the title that night.
That was a big one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Sean Long got the winner, and
that's right.
He scored the one at the club.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So that was a big night. Cheltenham had even that night, they had three or four dropping out and coming off injured, and they really dug that one out. That did feel like a pivotal moment. I think Cambridge were top going into that game, but there's been some good battles between the clubs. I'm definitely not suggesting that Cheltenham will say, "Oh, it's Cambridge at home. That's going to be easy." Definitely not. But if they want to survive in League One, having got a point against Portsmouth and a point against Derby, they need to be getting results against some of the teams around them if they want to give themselves any chance of getting out of it. But they've got Blackpool away on Tuesday, Port Vale away next Saturday. Both, again, look really tough, but a couple of positive results and suddenly they're in the race again. At the moment, they're miles off it. And, you know, effectively 11 points from safety, really, and Wigan and Reading shouldn't be in the relegation zone anyway because of their points deduction. So it is bleak at the moment. But Clark's sort of telling his players, don't look at the league table, pointless, just focus on getting a few results. It's not good, suddenly going to look good after one result because of the deficit, but it isn't as bad as it feels for him because he's only just taken over and he's already got a positive result. So I'm hoping that will galvanise and give people a little bit of hope. And the fans definitely responded well to Clark. They did boo the players off after the Fleetwood game, but it certainly wasn't directed at Darrell Clark. It was directed at the players. There was a bit of a disappointing performance in the EFL Trophy last Tuesday against Newport, where he made 9 changes. Some of the fringe players were given a chance and Newport deserved the win. It's 2-0. But in terms of the last league game, if Cheltenham can take that into the Cambridge game, because that performance against Derby was pretty good, pretty spirited and, you know, deserved the point.
So the big question then, do you think they will do it? What's your prediction?
I think a huge thing was getting that first goal. You know, the longer that went on, I really felt sorry for some of the, I won't single anyone out, but some of the players looked like they had the weight of the world on their shoulders, just trying to control the ball because they were thinking, you know, we haven't scored all season, we're breaking records. It was painful to watch it sort of gradually take its hold in terms of the confidence. That's now gone. So they've got that first goal. Obviously, the next thing they need to tick off is the first win. I'll probably be accused of sitting on the fence here, but I can see Saturday's game ending in a score draw. And I think, even though Cheltenham will be trying to win the game, I don't think that would be a disastrous result for them. Just to get another point on the board, something else to build on, another goal, gradually rebuild some of that fragile confidence that's ebbed away since the start of the season, when after pre-season, everyone was quite happy and looking forward to it. And then gradually, it became worse and worse as the goal drought went on. But I think it's such a key moment just to get that first goal. Obviously, they're going to need to win 15. Be good if they get one of them on Saturday. But Cambridge was really impressed with obviously the start they made to the season. I think, were you top after 3 or 4 games? Something like that?
So yeah, something like that. It feels like a long time ago now, John, to be honest.
And obviously, there's been a bit of a dip in form. I've seen a bit of the Burton game and stuff like that. It was on telly, wasn't it? And seen a few moments from that. So challenging times for Cambridge. But it feels like Cambridge and Cheltenham have been on a bit of a sort of similar,
yeah, definitely.
Because Cambridge, I think, was it their highest finish for a long time when they first got into League One? And
well, I think I'm going to get this wrong one way or another, but the last game of that first season, we were both in League One. Alfie May scored a last minute equaliser. And I think if we'd have kept, I think you jumped back above us and finished a place higher than us, but it was both of our highest ever league finishes. But I think it was like, it was a mistake from our centre back that basically stopped us finishing 14th or 13th or wherever it was. I can't remember. But same, basically the same journeys really, apart from last season where we obviously stayed up by the absolute skin of our teeth and you guys managed to do it comfortably.
Amazing escape last season to get out of it the way that Cambridge did. But yeah, both had a brilliant season in League Two when probably weren't fancied to go up. Both stayed up comfortably. Yeah, last season was a bit of a struggle for Cambridge. But if Cheltenham could do something similar to that this season, I think, you know, anything 20th above, Daryl Clark said he'll put that up with some of his greatest achievements as a manager when he's had a lot of promotions already. He's had five. I think he's had five on his CV. If he keeps Cheltenham up this season, it'll be up with anything he's done. But he's an absolute fighter. He's ruthless. I really like the way he's approached the job so far. And he knows how hard it's going to be. But I think there is a fighting chance that Cheltenham could make a fist of it at least now. You know, at least be in the running to stay up.
Well, here's hoping it doesn't start Saturday, obviously, for people listening to this pod. Let me just ask one last question for any travelling United fans looking for a drink pre-match or post-match to drown their sorrows. Where would you recommend around the ground or in town?
Yeah, good thing about Cheltenham's grounds is it's 10-minute, maybe maximum 15-minute walk to the town centre, depending on which part of the town you want to go to. But there's loads of decent places for a drink within walking distance. I would probably recommend, if you've got enough time, to wander down to the Feathered Fish on Winchcombe Street, decent place for a pint. There's the brewery, which is like a leisure complex, just a little bit further into the town centre. There's plenty of places for a drink there. But Cheltenham, you know, as Cambridge is a great place to just have a wander around. So whenever Cheltenham play Cambridge, we always go into the city centre and then you can obviously walk to the ground pretty easily. And Cheltenham's very similar. It's not like one of these old new grounds that's built miles out of town.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a lovely town. So if you haven't been before, it's the away end's probably one of the better stands in the grounds. Really nice view. And there's plenty of places to get a nice drink within short walk of the stadium.
Brilliant. Well, there's your tips. Thanks very much, John. Really appreciate your time.
Pleasure. Cheers.
It's been an interesting season for Cheltenham, hasn't it? For all of the wrong reasons. Cheltenham Town currently sit bottom of the league with 2 draws, 10 defeats, 0 wins, 1 goal scored, 20 conceded. Oh, it's late October, Swindle. It's I've never been ever more sure of United losing a football match than this. Like, I've completely
There's going to be like complete mania and meltdown if we, you know, there's quite a big likelihood that we're going to go there and lose like 3-1. And it will just be, if you think there were some meltdowns last season with the Bonner outs and the, you know, calling out the players, prepare yourself for Saturday, because it will be monumental. It'll be biblical. We are really setting ourselves up for a nightmare here. It is kind of fortunate in a way they got that goal against Derby.
It really
going
is.
Going into it against a team who hadn't scored, we'd be really, wondering. But, you know, they're a team that are in League One. They're having a shocking start to the season. We've seen, to a lesser degree, Burton last season having a horrendous start and everyone kind of writing them off and they're down. I know Cheltenham aren't quite in the same, you know, boat and are in it a lot worse off, but they will get a win and they will get points on the board and they will start to score goals. And Cambridge United need to make sure that we are not the team that gives them that in back into the league, because apart from anything else, the way that we're playing at the moment, we need to look at Cheltenham and think they're one of the teams that we need to finish above and we need to be beating them. And we've seen already with the Stevenage game, we've seen already the Shrewsbury game, having chances, Port Vale as well, having chances against teams that are going to be, theoretically could be around you and not taking them is a real struggle. And, you know, we just need to put Cheltenham away by hook or by crook. The performance to me is completely secondary. The result is the thing that's important and we need to win that game.
I agree. I actually thought the boys made a really good point on the preview pod before Shrewsbury, which was also the Burton review pod, where they said, actually, weirdly, obviously points are always good, but they were basically saying, you know, we sort of want to see a performance here because we've been playing so badly, even when we sort of scraped through with a couple of points here or there, or like something a bit creditable, like let's say Wigan away, for example, or Vale at home. Actually, the performances really haven't been up to scratch. So we're saying, you know, the Shrewsbury game, actually what you want to see is like a really solid performance, just a bit of intent, a bit of attacking sort of threat. Let's not go into whether of the extent to which it happened or not. I'm fully with you for this weekend. I couldn't give a shit how we play. Come out of that game with 3 points, which in whichever way you manage to get those 3 points. I think it's easy to look at this league table. I'll actually just asterisk this by saying that because of how we're having to record this, because of fitting it around our schedules, we haven't actually spoken to John right now at the time of recording. So you'll have just heard John explain Cheltenham's situation much better than me and Swindle. But what I was going to say was, like, in the general sense of the bottom end of the division, it's very easy to write teams off, right? And go, okay, Cheltenham are 9 points off safety now, and it's October. That is a lot of points, right? We turned that basically eight points around in a month last year, right? And I know that took a pretty remarkable run. But they've got a good manager now in Daryl Clark. It's easy to think, oh, Cheltenham, oh, that's 3 points. It's easy to go into it as a fan base and think, well, like these are fodder, right? You can't go into it with that mentality, because every team, they've been at this level as long as we have. They stayed up very comfortably last year. They've obviously started the season terribly. They've lost Alfie May, blah, blah, blah. We're still going to have to be at our best. I don't think we can go walking and strolling into this game thinking, oh, just because we're, what, at the time of playing 13 points above them. You've got to go into it with the right mentality, and that's something that is going to be massively important this Saturday.
Well, hugely. And also, this is the time of the season where teams can get runs together. This is the time where we saw our season derail last season, but this is also, games are so thick and fast that if you get a bit of momentum going, you can be sitting quite pretty by Christmas. And if we look, that we're 7 points clear of the relegation zone, which is brilliant if you look at it on the face of it. All three of those teams in the relegation zone, in 21st, 22nd and 23rd, all have a game in hand on us anyway. Wigan are in that three, and they are not a team that I am considering they're going to be below us come the end of the season. So we really need to look at the table and look at, you know, the rest of this calendar year going forward. And we need to use that Cheltenham game, not even as a springboard, but you need to stop the rot, because we are in a bit of a rot. We had such a good start to the season, and there was a lot of optimism kicking about. And then, you know, roping performances started to kick in, and now, you know, in the form table, we're right down there, and we need to, you know, we need to turn these draws into wins. And I must sound like such a kind of hypocrite after last year saying we weren't converting enough losses into draws, but at the moment, you know, we've, the last five games we've drawn three, lost two, and we've been in positions where we could have won at least two of them, maybe even comfortably. So I think it's really important that this game is taken very seriously, like you say. But I hope there's a habit that Cambridge United have got into almost out of nowhere. I've started games horrendously, you know, in the last six or seven games we've gone behind, and then really shown quite a lot, like, little reaction when we have gone behind. And I think Mark Bonner really needs to instill in the players how important it is to start this game well this weekend, and, you know, not concede first. And that should be kind of priority number one, pretty much.
Yeah, they're going to be well up for this. They're going to be looking at this as like the perfect opportunity to get 3 points on the board. So I think it's a tougher encounter than what I'm trying to say is, I think it's a tougher encounter than the league table suggests and their horrendous start to the season suggests, given a lot of the context. But that isn't to say that a team like us, if we have genuine sort of comfortable mid-table aspirations, you've just got to take 3 points here.
There's no question about any of that. And like, I think our aspirations and expectations might be slightly skewed at the moment. And I think the way that we are not showing as much versatility as we maybe had in the past might mean we're in for a bit of a longer season than people were expecting after five or six games after such a promising start.
What would you actually like to see from United on Saturday? Is there anything you'd like to see different in terms of a lineup or an approach or certain players, or is there anything in particular that you've sort of spotted that you'd love to see Saturday?
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? Because I mean, we've shown in the kind of shape with, you know, 4-4-2-3-1, if you will, that we can make that work and be quite dangerous with it. And we've shown that this season with this personnel. The issue is we seem to be going a little bit missing in the middle now somehow. You know, that Digby Thomas area that was so kind of convincing and looking good at the start of the season seems to have tailed off a bit. We seem to be kind of exposed. And I think there's a bit of, you know, we've spoken about Liam Bennett not being quite on form. You know, Danny Andrew might be, you know, exposed at times. And I think there's a lot of a burden you know, on Brophy and Gordon to drop in and fill in. And I think at times when they those two start, they maybe haven't. And we kind of dedicate too much time to this on this podcast to Jack Lancaster, but you know that number 10 role isn't quite working for him, and it isn't quite working for United, and we really need to look at that. A change of shape I'd be kind of loath to do. I did talk about the five at the back turning into a three when we're attacking, but I think I'd be loath to suggest that for this game. I think we've got to kind of instill a bit of faith in the seniority and the experience of Ryan Bennett and Michael Morrison, and you know, look to those leaders this weekend and have that flat back for us, so we've got a bit more kind of, you know, options and malleability going forward. But I mean, the return of Adam May, I think, is something, and also the return of Janna, I think it's kind of mental to think back to this time last season that I'm talking now about how Saiku Janna could really be a positive impact for us. But I think having him back would be brilliant. And then we've seen that Cousins is returning. It's difficult for us. We know that he's obviously a player with great pedigree, and he's going to be a player with quality. Is this the game, you know, for him? Is a question. I would suggest maybe not. And I think maybe we've seen Adam May do it at this level, and I'd like to see Adam May at the weekend. I would start Had May, incidentally.
Same.
If anyone's asking, I'd get Had May up there. And I'd just get a few more balls into him. I think we've almost become a bit too kind of, we're overplaying it a little bit when we get to like the final third. We seem a little bit nervous to try and whip a ball in there. Hadme's a big fella, and get it in there. And, you know, a ball, you know, he might just get in front of the defender and force the defender to head it down. And then, you know, we've actually seen Weirdly Digby find himself in that position. But maybe even Jack Lancaster could find himself, you know, on that ball on the edge, or whoever is kind of dropping in if George Thomas goes a bit forward. I think we just need to give opposition defenders a bit more to do when we've got the ball out wide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with that. I actually think the sort of blueprint for this for me is Fleetwood away. And I wouldn't be surprised if we went for that exact lineup, which was a Hadme up top, Janna on the left. And I think that would be the only changes that he makes. I think May and Cousins both started Tuesday. I don't know if they played the full game, but I'd be pretty surprised if both of them coming off injuries would be straight back in a starting lineup. I'm sure they'll be on the bench. I know Kaikai is back in contention, so maybe he is worth... maybe he'll get the nod ahead of Janna, but some options there knocking around. But yeah, had me up top, definitely. I think he will go with that as well, despite Fajiri obviously still finding ways to hit the back of the net. Let's have your score prediction.
I feel like this is, I don't want to kind of over egg the importance of this, and I don't want to become one of those kind of doom and gloom fans. I think for Bonner and for the players, this is an absolutely monumental game. Like, I think this can really define how the next couple of months goes. And it's so important. I think they'll be feeling that pressure, and they'll be feeling the kind of, you know, the annoyance of the fans from the past few weeks. So I think Bonner will kind of put a rocket up them, and hopefully it goes right. I think it's going to be a tight game, and I'm not confident with us defensively. So with a very long-winded answer to your question, I think Cambridge United will win 2-1.
Okay, good. I honestly think Cheltenham win 2-0. I think they score early and we stink the gap out a little bit. I'm just so scarred from last season, man. It's something about this time of year and like.
Well, I think this is a real valid point that we should touch on, because I think there's always a divide between your positive end of fans and your negative end of fans, and there's a few in the middle, and I'm probably one that veers, you know, jumps over that fence every 2 weeks. I think it's absolutely fine for fans to be absolutely shitting it at the moment. We all experienced it last season. It was horrendous. We saw a very similar start to season and then a very steady decline, and it was a long decline, and we watched a lot of bad football, and there's teams around us that are picking up points, and it's okay for us to feel that this could really be a repeat, and it's okay to be nervous about it. But I think the personnel we've got compared to this time last season, I think we're in better stead, and I think that they can go out this weekend and right the wrongs of past weeks. But if they don't, then fans who are of a timid complexion and persuasion, prepare yourselves, because it's going to be an absolute tirade of feces throwing.
Yeah, it really will. It won't be pleasant afterwards, but I'm pretty braced for it, to be honest. But that is just too many years, more than anything. I think we are probably a better football team than Cheltenham. And there is a strong chance that if we show up, we'll show that. But yeah, I just can't see it for some reason. I can only see like a furious away end as they sort of, you know, stroll to their second and confirm all 3 points in the second half or something.
Yeah, we've been in a lot of those, and this I completely agree with what you say. The way this season has gone, you know, if you're drawing a graph, it feels a little bit like we're in that territory already. You know, that horrible kind of pointing and scrutinizing already. But yeah, anyway, positivity. Let's bring some positivity.
Come on, it hasn't happened yet. Let's save that for Sunday. Sundar, let's wrap up there. Thanks very much for joining today.
Great to speak to you again, mate.
Yeah, and you. Let us know when you're next doing the Zorb, obviously. To finish off, we're doing something a little bit different to finish off. Something we've been meaning to do for a long time. Just to highlight a bit of the fantastic work that the club do, but actually specifically the audio description service, which is originally intended for blind and partially sighted fans, but as now also includes users on the autism spectrum. I spoke with Neil Cornwell, who runs the service. It's important just, you know, to us that this football club is a lot more than just what's happening on the pitch, especially when we're probably getting beat down at the bottom of the league. So I will leave you with our chat with Neil so you can hear a bit more about what they get up to and how you can help out if you're interested. Right, Youth fans, delighted to be joined by Neil Cornwell here, the lead describer for CFC Audio for All. Neil, I was wondering just to kick off, if you just want to give a bit of an overview of what you do and what Audio for All does at United.
Well, very simply and very basically, it's a tailored commentary service which was originally started for blind and visually impaired supporters. But over the last 12 months has now been expanded to basically include anybody who thinks they might benefit from having a tailored audio description service. Mostly that's people on the autistic spectrum, but also anybody of a certain age, perhaps, who suffered with dementia or memory problems. Basically, it's a way for supporters who otherwise would be sat at home listening to the likes of Mark Johnson on the radio to be able to carry on coming to the Abbey to experience everything you get with a live match day in the company of their friends, in the company of their family. And just to enable them to carry on that attendance.
It sounds like a brilliant service and something that obviously isn't spoken about a lot. So thank you for your time coming on the pod and giving everyone a bit of an overview of it. So how long has it been going for, and how have you sort of progressed in that time?
Well, the service originally started in the 2011-2012 season, and a little bit of history. Halfway through that season, if you remember, we were languishing in the depths of non-league at the time. And a young man by the name of Warren started to go blind during his A-levels. It's a genetic condition that to this day I can't spell, let alone pronounce. Had been coming up the Abbey since he was quite a young child, and his mum got in touch with the club and said, you know, Warren would really love to keep on coming up the football because that's where he stands with all his mates in the Newmarket Road end. He's going to lose his sight. What facilities have you got to enable him to carry on coming up? And at the time, the club had to admit, well, really sorry, we haven't got anything. And then some bright spark remembered that gathering dust in a cupboard somewhere was a piece of commentary kit that belonged to the Royal National Institute for the Blind and was part of a scheme called Soccer Sight that was started, I believe, by Tony Blair and Gordon Brown to facilitate audio description commentary at football grounds. So we dug that kit out, dusted it off, put out an appeal for volunteer describers. We had one training session from the guy who does audio description at Ipswich Town. And then from then on, we've done it all ourselves. We recruit all our own describers. We do all our own in-house training. And for the first few years, we were very much left alone. It was volunteer run. It was volunteer led. We did all our own publicity. We did all our own recruiting. Since Alex Tunbridge has taken over as CEO at the Abbey, as much as all sorts of things at the Abbey have relied on volunteers, and they've done a wonderful job, now we're trying to establish ourselves as a professional League One club. It's a bit different to the non-league days. And everything now is trying to come under the umbrella of Cambridge United. So the club have got far more involved. We now have a dedicated disabled supporter liaison officer. The club have invested in some brand new kit. So we're not using the 20-year-old kit that we borrowed from the Royal National Institute for the Blind. They've also just invested in a brand new transmitter. So we can now reach more people. We have more receivers. And I say, since that's happened, we were contacted by a couple of people who said, you know, our children come up to the Abbey. They've got autism. They love the experience, but they find it quite overwhelming. Could we use the commentary service? Because it would help them to focus and enjoy the experience without the anxiety. So over the last 12 months, whilst we still have a number of listeners who've got sight problems, we also now have a number of regular users who are on the autistic spectrum. So it just keeps going from strength to strength.
That sounds amazing. What a journey. And I know this is a hard question to answer, but I was wondering if you could try and sort of summarize like how important the service is to those fans.
It's the difference, I think, as I said in the introduction, it's the difference between somebody sitting at home with the radio on while all of their mates or their family are at the game and being able to take in the whole experience and still be part of that family group or that friend group. That is the simple difference. Without getting too technical, the equipment that we use has the ability for people to use one earphone. So wherever they are in the ground, and you can go anywhere in the ground, it doesn't matter. We haven't got a designated area like some clubs have, where they stick all, you know, the fans who use audio description in one little block. People can go anywhere inside the Abbey and we will reach them with our broadcast. And with one earphone, they can have our commentary coming in one ear, and in the other ear, they're getting all the noise of the crowd, all the atmosphere, and their mates can still have a conversation with them. So it really does become all-inclusive. People who otherwise would have been excluded, and in the past, and I'm ashamed to say in many clubs still are excluded, are now brought in. And obviously from a club point of view, as they're now included, they're paying for tickets, they're buying programs, they're buying merchandise. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Is it, as a, you know, as a United fan yourself, and as I'm sure most of the volunteers are sort of lifelong United fans, is it something that sort of is a point of pride for you to see the club leading the way, or, you know, services associated with the club like yourself leading the way in this sort of support for disabled fans?
A couple of points on that. It's not always youth fans who we get as volunteers. We've had the whole range of people, and we've been very lucky with the amount of people and the quality of people that we still have as describers. We've actually had two or three students, either at Anglia Ruskin or at Cambridge University, who've been describers for us. They've used it as a way of gaining experience in broadcasting and making contacts with a view to perhaps pursuing a career in media. Other people look at it as a way of giving a little bit back, as a football fan, even if they're not necessarily a Cambridge fan. From my point of view, I think it's very much a double-edged sword. We're all very proud in how trailblazing in many ways Cambridge United have been in promoting this service, and blowing our own trumpet a little bit. When I said that anybody can use our service anywhere in the ground, that includes away supporters. And we do have a number of away supporters who do use the service. It tends to be clubs where they've got a similar service at their own ground. For example, at the recent Barnsley game, which we'll gloss over very quickly for the result, but we had a Barnsley supporter, and that's the second time that he's used us now. And the feedback we get from away supporters, 99 times out of 100, is praising the quality of the service and how much they get out of it. And when I said it was a double-edged sword, what has really surprised me and disappointed me in many, many ways is how few clubs still don't offer this kind of service. And a lot of very big, and with all due respect to Cambridge United, a lot bigger and a lot richer clubs don't invest in it, and fans are excluded. It's roughly between 50 and 60% of the 92 that offer it, which wow. when you think, and believe it or not, there are some Premier League clubs that don't offer it. And when you think of the amount of money that is sloshing around at the top end of the Prem, you know, the amount of money that our kit costs the club, it's a reasonable sum of money for a club like Cambridge United. To a Premier League club, it's small change that you find down the back of a sofa. And to think that in 2023, you know, a club that can finish bottom of the Premier League and get £80 million isn't going to invest a four-figure sum to enable its own supporters to attend home games, I think is really sad.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of, it's quite startling as a statistic, really, but brilliant to hear that United are leading the way like that. And well, Neil, thank you for coming on and giving us, you know, helping us sort of shine a spotlight on it and what is such a brilliant service. For anyone listening who might be interested in being a volunteer or who knows someone who might want to use the service, how can they get in touch and how could they get involved?
I'm so glad you asked that, because otherwise I was going to jump in and do my own PR. The most important side of it is users. Yep. If people aren't listening to us, there's no point us being there. We do have a regular core of users at the moment, but we always, always, always want more. So our service is available to anybody who thinks they might benefit from it. And that's not just people with sight problems. You don't have to be blind. We've had people use us in the past who've got very good vision close up, but struggle when the ball goes at the other end of the pitch or over the far side. So any kind of sight problems. I mentioned autism earlier. Anybody who struggles to concentrate for any reason whatsoever. Having a dedicated, personalised commentary in your ears helps you enjoy the matchday experience more. So literally, if you think you or anybody you know might benefit from this, get in touch. Equally, we're always, always, always on the lookout for volunteer describers. No age limits. We've literally had people describing for their Duke of Edinburgh Award from the age of 15. Some of us are slightly longer in the tooth without giving my age away. The one thing I would absolutely love, in our 12th season, we've never had a female describer, and I would absolutely love it if anybody who thinks they could do it would get in touch, because it's all been blokes so far. You can find us on the club website. CFU have also promoted us a lot over the years, but anytime you're at the Abbey, in the Newmarket Road car park is a disability access point, which is just to the left of the main turnstile block. We are there every single home game, every competition, pre-season friendlies included as well. So literally when there's a home game at the Abbey, we are in turnstile 9. Just go to the main turnstile block and we will be there almost always, an hour and a quarter, sometimes an hour and a half before kickoff, and always afterwards. So please come and introduce yourself, say hello, and we'll take it from there.
Brilliant. Do go down, anyone listening, even just say well done to Neil and his team. Neil, thank you so much for coming on the pod.
Thank you for your time, Jules. It's much appreciated. Just as a final thought, there have been plenty of things that we've been able to criticise Cambridge United for over the years. I mean, I've been going up 38 years now, and at various points they haven't covered themselves in glory. But I think things like this really should be shouted from the rooftops, because in many ways Cambridge are leading the way. When they started in non-league, there are only other two other non-league clubs doing it. And the fact that other clubs are now using us as a template, we have helped a couple of other clubs to start their own services. And they visited us to see how it's done. And we've then kept in communication to help them get their own service off the ground. So I think it's something that as a club, and as a group of fans, we should absolutely be proud of.
Absolutely. Completely agree. Well, there we go. Up the ewes.
Up the ewes, Jules. Cheers for your time, mate. That's very much appreciated.